ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's one of our biggest social problems, and it's growing. Until relatively recently, we haven't really understood what it's costing, and there's still a way to go with that. But we're starting to get it.
It's one of the biggest threats facing society today in terms of social problems that we're having to grapple with.
This is Liesl Schrabi from Arizona State University.
Loneliness is deadly. It affects us physically, it affects our mental health, as well as impacting the quality of our lives. So as a public crisis, I mean, I would say that it's one of the more significant ones that we're facing.
Loneliness. The WHO calls it a global health concern. The US Surgeon General, America's top doctor, labelled it an epidemic. It's what we're talking about this time on The Money. Hello, I'm Richard Adie, and this is something that affects someone you know. It might affect you, because it affects a lot of people. Andrew Dempster is at KPMG, where he leads the mental health advisory business.
We've got a range really of between 20% and 25% overall experiencing loneliness, but many more experience loneliness over their life course. So there is different types of loneliness. Probably the most worrisome is chronic loneliness, which is persistent. But then there's also periods that people might have in their lives where they experience loneliness, but it's sporadic and it doesn't persist. So I think we've got to see it for what it is in terms of those differences, but it's also experienced differently by different age groups and different ethnic and cultural background groups and people of different sexual identities as well. So it doesn't affect or impact everyone equally.
But it impacts, what, north of 5 million Australians, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's not something that's other people's problems or challenge, so to speak. This is very much us and people that we know, we love, we live with, friends, family, and our communities.
Do we know what it's costing us?
A little while ago, Curtin University did some research on the economic costs, and it was set at $2.7 billion per annum for Australia, which really relates to almost or just over $1,500 per person per year. So it is a substantial impact to the economy, to businesses, and to individuals who are impacted.
Obviously, we can't monitor loneliness in real time. But the HILDA survey, which has been following 17,000 Australians for more than two decades, has a red-hot go. Roger Wilkins is HILDA's co-director.
Up until around about 2009, loneliness was trending downwards in the community. But since then, it's actually overall trended upwards slightly. And in particular, it's been very much concentrated amongst young people. So people in the 15 to 24 years age range, they've been trending upwards since around about 2009. And then there was a very large increase in loneliness amongst that 15 to 24-year-old age group in 2020, which, of course, is coincident with the arrival of the COVID pandemic and the lockdowns that particularly were concentrated in Melbourne.
We'll come back to young people later. But what's happening with older people?
If you go back to the beginning of this century, the 65 and overs stood out as being much more lonely than the rest of the community. And that probably resonates with our traditional understanding that, you know, often there are widows and widowers amongst that group. They're not participating in the labour market, and they've traditionally had low economic resources as well, which is often very important to being able to participate in social activities and interact with other people. But what we've seen, and this is, a really good news story coming out of the data, is there's been a substantial sustained decline in loneliness amongst these over 65s, to the point where now they're actually narrowly the age group with the lowest rates of loneliness in the community.
And this is because older people are healthier and wealthier.
So we've seen home ownership rates be maintained amongst the older population, which is very important to economic well-being. But at the same time, we've also seen substantial increases to the age pension. We've seen people increasingly retiring with significant superannuation balances. So their economic well-being is certainly substantially better now than it was at the beginning of the century. And that's very valuable to being able to, you know, go out for dinner and participate in all sorts of other activities that involve interacting with other people. I think that the health side should also not be neglected as being important. So we definitely see that poor health and disability are very strongly connected to loneliness. And that's the other substantial trend we've seen over the last 20 years is an improvement in the health and the health care of the elderly population. So they're substantially healthier now than they were 20 years ago. That's partly due to economic factors, but it's also just due to things like progress in healthcare and health technology.
Loneliness is a subjective measure. It's how people feel. That makes it more challenging to get really robust numbers. But we do know that you're more likely to be lonely if you live alone. And we also know how many of us are doing that. Leisha Chu is a senior research fellow at the Australian Institute of Family Studies.
Living alone is a complex and, I must say, interesting phenomenon, depending from which perspective you look at it. We now have more than one quarter of a household occupied by one person. The increase by 1.2 percentage points from 24.4% in 2016 to 25.6% in 2021. That may sound quite insignificant, but when you put into absolute number, we actually have an additional 347,000 households occupied by one person. That's quite significant.
It is 347,000 households. That's a lot of households.
It is.
That 347,000 isn't the total, remember. It's the increase in single-occupant households since the previous census. So, who's doing it?
We have more women living alone compared to men. We also have other demographics that's quite interesting. We have more older, but not really old people living alone. It's more 60 to 80. We also have more divorced people living alone compared in the past.
So more women than men.
Yeah.
Are they mostly widows or are they mostly divorced? Or what's going on there that we know?
There are three groups. Widowed groups, divorced, and also single people. In the past, living alone tend to be concentrated among the older people, widow because of the death of the partner. But now we have more separated divorced people living alone. And we also have another group of single people living alone. So there are three.
Women who live alone are more likely to be widows. This is how women living longer than men plays out. But who's the loneliest, Leisha? Women or men?
I think depending how you look at it, we have more women living alone than men, but the men more likely to feel lonely compared to women who live alone. So perhaps it's balanced out in terms of absolute number. It's probably similar, but we haven't looked at that in absolute number.
Right. And what about older people compared to younger people?
Older people more likely to feel lonely compared to younger people who live alone. I think that's because of the circumstances. Often they live alone because of the death of the partner, and their health and their conditions may just prevent them from being connected.
So health problems, especially for older people, can mean more loneliness. But it goes the other way too. Loneliness has an impact on health. And Andrew Dempster from KPMG says it's really quite profound.
Similar to having six alcoholic drinks a day, to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, it has impacts on mental health and well-being, and also on cardiovascular health. So really what we see is loneliness in itself having an impact across physical and mental health and well-being on individuals that I think is often understated and underestimated.
So if it's having that kind of impact, we can probably see that in terms of going to the doctor more or going to hospital more even.
Yeah, Yeah, certainly there are higher rates of emergency department presentations for those who are lonely. When we look at visits to primary care or the general practitioner, on average, we see about 6 visits per year. This is an average figure for most of Australians. When someone is experiencing loneliness, that goes up to 10 on average per annum. And I think, you know, whilst that may not sound a lot, that's 4 more visits to the doctor per year, purely based on the fact that they are experiencing loneliness.
And do all those impacts add up?
Certainly, again, loneliness has been shown to actually impact the life expectancy of individuals who experience it. And that's often caught up as well in, if you like, some of the commonly coexisting or other conditions that people might be experiencing that often overlap with loneliness. They might be depression, anxiety, they might be some of the chronic health conditions we talked about, and also things like alcohol and other drug intake and tobacco use.
So these are, I think, what technically are known as comorbidities, and it makes it very difficult to disentangle, doesn't it?
It does, it does. And it's really, I think, one of those life sort of areas that is a complex kind of overlapping Venn diagram, if you like, that really, when I take, say, one comorbidity that's common when we think about loneliness as an example, we look at people with depression. Often, if people are lonely, the depression can be worsened or they can develop depression if they're feeling loneliness for long enough. Vice versa, if people are experiencing an episode of depression, they can then actually develop loneliness. So it's not a sort of one-way relationship, if you like, with a number of those comorbidities.
So that interplay again between loneliness and health, and it continues. If your health's poor enough to affect your ability to work, more loneliness.
Those who are employed generally are a few percentage points lower in terms of loneliness. So being employed and in good work is good for your health, but also means that you're less likely to experience loneliness. On the other side of the coin, those who are unemployed do experience higher levels of loneliness. I think it's sort of close to that, just under 30% when we compare those in the workforce, which is down closer to 22-21%. So it definitely does have an impact on loneliness, being unemployed and disconnected from that work environment.
This is The Money with me, Richard Adey, and this time we're looking at loneliness. And just a reminder from Roger Wilkins of the Hilda Survey of which group is most affected by it.
In particular, it's been very much concentrated amongst young people. People in the 15 to 24 years age range, they've been trending upwards since around about 2009.
This isn't just an Australian thing. Liesl Schrabi from Arizona State University.
I mean, I think there is a common assumption that loneliness increases with age, that the people who are most lonely are going to be people who are older, who are a little more isolated. But surprisingly, research shows that loneliness can happen across age groups, and also young people, Gen Z in particular, tend to experience loneliness at pretty high rates, and rates that are similar sometimes to older adults and seniors.
In Australia, this trend goes back to 2009. Roger Wilkins.
I think there's a very suspicious correlation with growth in social media and in smartphone use. We're also seeing over that period since 2009 a rise in psychological distress amongst younger people. Again, you know, we don't have much in the way of good causal evidence of the role of social media in that growth in psychological distress, but I would say it's very strongly implicated.
But that, even if it's a coincidence, it's a disconcerting one in that youngest people are the loneliest, that we know they're the biggest users of social media.
Yes.
And we're seeing this relatively poor psychological well-being in them.
Absolutely. And the reason why we care about, you know, whether it's because of social media is because we're trying to find out, we want to know what to do about it. So to know what to do about it is certainly helped by understanding what's causing it. But as you say, we don't need to know the cause to be concerned about it.
Roger, I feel we need to make a distinction here between loneliness and psychological distress. What's the difference?
Loneliness is simply a direct measure of a response to a question, I often feel very lonely, and they can answer on a scale from strongly disagree to strongly agree. So it's a direct assessment of exactly that concept of loneliness, how they interpret it. With psychological distress, we're getting at more of a measure of mental health, which is very strongly connected with loneliness, but again, it's quite distinct. It's things like I often feel hopeless and worthless. It's a whole battery of questions which are aggregated to come up with this measure of poor, you know, mental health. It, you know, it even includes things like so restless that I couldn't sit still. So it's very much getting at a mental health condition.
For Lizzie Shrabi, technology is definitely part of the problem.
We are more connected now than ever thanks to technology. We have social media. Our phones are always at our fingertips. We're constantly communicating with other people. We constantly have this access to ourselves where other people can reach us. But at the same time, we're also feeling more alone than ever before. And so technology is designed to connect us with others, to help us build and maintain our relationships. I think that where we run into problems is when we start to use it as a replacement. So when we're using technology in a way that causes us to turn our attention away from each other towards our devices, when we start to cut each other out and we focus more on what's happening on our screens, I think that's when we get into more dangerous territory and when it starts to fuel disconnection instead of, you know, the social connection that it was really designed for.
And this seems to be fostering a kind of techno-weariness.
Something that I've been seeing is that we've reached a point where people are feeling really burnt out by the technology. They're feeling really frustrated. And especially for Gen Z and younger millennials that have grown up in this technology, really saturated environment, I think they're almost nostalgic for, you know, what we had before when we used to connect a little bit more organically. And I think a lot of times they kind of idealize just being together face-to-face, meeting people in person. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that technology has just always been a way that they've conducted their relationships. They've grown up in this environment.
For some, technology isn't just a way they've conducted their relationships. It's the way they've conducted their relationships.
I've done interviews with young people, young adults who have told me that they've had only romantic relationships that have started through social media and through dating apps. They've never had the experience of just walking up to somebody in person and asking them out. And I mean, you know, that's not true for everyone. Of course, those are the extreme cases. But at the same time, I think it's a real reminder of how much and how quickly things have changed for young people today.
Whether you're young or old, loneliness is worse for women.
Women do show higher rates of loneliness than men, and particularly in the younger age groups. They also do show at higher rates amongst the elderly, but I think that's mostly connected to women in that older age range being more likely to be widows because men tend to die before their partners. But amongst the younger groups, I think what I would say is that it's, again, very correlated with social media use. We know that women, young women, are much heavier users of social media than males. And again, you know, they have correlated with that higher rates of loneliness and higher rates of psychological distress.
Women, especially young women, are having a harder time of it. Young people more widely are having a harder time of it. But increasingly, it seems that it's an everywhere problem.
I think that people often associate loneliness with individualistic cultures. And when I say individualistic, I'm talking about cultures that really emphasize individualism. They really emphasize independence, cultures where it's common for people to live alone, away from families, sometimes without romantic partners. And the US and Australia would definitely qualify as being highly individualistic. I think there's a tendency to look at those sorts of societies and say, okay, people there seem like they're more isolated. It seems like they would struggle more. But at the same time, we also do see high rates of loneliness in collectivistic cultures, places where they really emphasize community, they really emphasize interdependence, and the idea that we're all connected, we all affect each other. You know, they experience it as well. And so I think that it's complicated. And so some of it is also about expectations. So for example, if you are in a culture where it's really common as you age to live with extended family and you're not doing that, that might feel more isolating than it would if you were in an environment where that wasn't the norm, somewhere like the US, somewhere like Australia. And so there's so much nuance there that it's hard to say. I mean, one takeaway that I think that we can have from all of this is saying that loneliness has become a universal experience and a universal problem.
In Australia, we know that loneliness has been rising since 2009. We also know that it spiked in 2020, and we know why.
COVID certainly supercharged this growth in loneliness. And I think, you know, concerningly, we've only seen loneliness decrease, you know, very slightly since 2020. Now, we only have data at the present up to 2022. So 2022, while we didn't have lockdowns, I think, you know, we were still very much in the midst of the pandemic. And so perhaps there will be some further improvement subsequent to 2022. But at the moment, we don't have evidence of that.
We'll know a lot more about that in a year or so. We already know who it affected the most.
It was so significant for people that were in high school and college and people who were at these really distinct life stages where they didn't get to experience them the way that, you know, most of us did. I mean, it was really an unfortunate situation for them in particular. And I think we're still seeing that, you know, after the pandemic started to die down, when restrictions started to lift, things got better, but it wasn't like it went away either. So people are still experiencing loneliness here in the US. The Surgeon General recently issued an advisory calling it an epidemic. And so it was increasing before the pandemic. The pandemic made it worse, but at the same time, it also didn't go away after.
Part of why it didn't, or at least why it hasn't so far, could well be because of a kind of reset.
We possibly formed some habits during COVID that have persisted, remote learning, working from home, which while in the immediate term we might value and like, but over the medium to longer term is actually not in our interest in terms of our well-being. So facing the morning commute is not fun, but if you get through it, then you get the benefits of the social interactions that subsequently occur when you are seeing people in person rather than virtually.
Yeah, certainly my own experience is I'm mostly in 3 days a week, but what I really wish is that everybody was in those same 3 days so that I could see them.
Yes, it's definitely a coordination problem we have there. That and I know that some workplaces have tried to address that by saying, well, these are the days that everyone should be in the office and then the other days are optional, if you like.
Researchers are still unpicking all the relationships between loneliness, health and well-being, loneliness and employment, loneliness and poverty. It's complicated, and we still don't know what it's costing us. But considering the breadth of the problem, a problem the World Health Organization's just called a global health concern, it hasn't really held the attention of governments. Andrew Dempster from KPMG.
There's not historically been a portfolio or a department or a minister responsible for loneliness in and of itself. When we look at other areas in the, I suppose, social and health settings, we often have departments of health, departments of human services, ministers for housing, homelessness, and a range of social policy areas. That means that, unfortunately, when we look at those, as we sort of talked about before, complex and sort of overlapping challenges like loneliness, they often sit across a number of those portfolios or areas within ministerial responsibilities. So everyone owns a bit of it, but no one owns it in isolation. And I think that goes to then the broader sort of government stance on how loneliness is viewed and also the, I suppose, targeted approaches to resolving some of the social connection challenges that we see.
The Albanese government said that wellbeing will be part of what it measures and considers in its budgetary process, Andrew. Can that be seen as a hopeful development?
Look, I think it is. I think the directions we're seeing in some other countries, like New Zealand, for example, that have sort of looked at the wellbeing aspects and really baking them into the budget. I think we've gone some way towards that in Australia. And there's those measures that have been both, I suppose, welcomed, but also highly kind of challenged because of the date of some of the data that we're using to look at wellbeing and health and the kind of lag indicators, if you like, that we've sort of seen within the budget. But I think it's a promising start and it does help to potentially get topics like loneliness on the agenda.
You don't have to use the wellbeing framework. There's modelling from the Australian National Mental Health Commission showing that for every dollar spent addressing loneliness, the return on investment's between $2.14 and $2.87.
When you look at the macro costs to Australian economy and that sort of $2.7 billion and overlay that with the return on investment that the National Mental Health Commission work has highlighted, if we sort of average that out and think about, you know, $2.50 for every dollar spent being returned in benefit for those interventions in loneliness, it makes the case itself, but also I think helps us to frame it as a productivity issue and one that will have a local economic impact on the workplaces that are supporting social connection, addressing some of the loneliness challenges, but also industries and then, you know, more broadly the Australian economy.
Andrew, I'm struck by the complexity of the problem. It really presents a series of policy challenges.
It also means that some of the considerations, interventions, supports, and kind of settings that governments at all levels, national, state, and local, need to think about in terms of how they build in services that people access every day, even connection, for example, to green spaces has been shown to have a strong influence on people's levels of loneliness. So those who don't have high quality green space access in their local communities have higher levels of loneliness, as an example. And I think needing to actually push the agenda on considering loneliness in all of those sorts of investments that governments make is really an important factor. Much the same as we commonly now, when we look at the environmental impact of investment decisions and the like, when they're built into government business cases.
So more time in the trees and less time on the screens.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's lots of Japanese research into exercising in green spaces and the benefits that has on mental health and well-being being shown to be well over and above even exercising outside of green spaces. So I think there is a real benefit in people connecting both in public spaces like parks and playgrounds and those sorts of areas. And I think that also allows for the health benefits to come with exercising and connecting with you know, other members of the community.
Thanks to Andrew Dempster, Principal Director at KPMG, leader of the National Mental Health Advisory Business. Also Roger Wilkins, Professorial Fellow at the Melbourne Institute of Applied Economic and Social Research and co-director of the Hilda Survey. Liesl Schrabi, who's in the Hugh Downs School of Human Communication at Arizona State University, and Leisha Chu, Senior Research Fellow at the Australian Institute of Family Studies. The money comes to you from Gadigal Land, Sydney. It's produced by Whitney Fitzsimmons. Our sound engineer is John Jacobs. I'm Richard Adie.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.